Well, hello there, listeners. Thank you for joining us here on Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Liz, and I'm so glad you are back for day three of our science article. We've been talking about shaking things up, and no, we're not talking about dancing, and we're not talking about controversial issues, but rather, we're talking about earthquakes and finding out ways to better understand and predict and be better prepared in case the next big one hits. And with me in the studio are my friends Amanda and Brian. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
And what have we been talking about, Brian?
We've been talking about the building of a network on the ocean floor to better predict, to detect and predict earthquakes and tsunamis.
Okay, so we're talking about what the Japanese authorities have been up to. And things have been kind of scary since the last big one hit. And that was in 2011. Can't believe it's 2011. That earthquake seemed like it wasn't too long ago. For me personally, I felt like it was just like last year.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like 2 years ago or something.
Yeah. But actually, wow. 2011, now already 2015. Whoa. Anyways, okay, because of that earthquake, the authorities have been really beefing up, or we say strengthening and increasing efforts to be more careful, to get better information so that they can be better prepared. What else have we been talking about for the last 2 days, Amanda?
Well, we've been talking about, we met Ichiro Akari. He is responsible for a lot of what has been happening. He is a scientist, a researcher, and he, using the equipment that he's hoping to use, which is more sophisticated than used in the past, to find out and predict these earthquakes. I think it's very interesting that this has happened because the government has been putting money into further research, especially after the 2011 earthquake, because they were not ready for it.
Okay. So up until then, they were expecting earthquakes to only, well, they were expecting earthquakes. Mm. They know there will always be earthquakes, but they weren't expecting an earthquake to be that huge. And because of that, they weren't expecting such a huge earthquake. They weren't expecting a tsunami of that size either. And if you're not expecting a tsunami of that size to be, you know, crashing into your, you know, your coastline, then you're not going to have these emergency systems set up in such a way to handle a tsunami of that size. So in other words, you're just not prepared in any way, you know. Even if you try to be, you're not ready. And so they're trying to do a better job in case the next one hits, and hopefully they'll be better prepared. Now, we have an interesting little name here, DONET. Brian, what is a DONET?
The DONET is the Dense Ocean Floor Network System for Earthquakes and Tsunamis.
Okay. I must be hungry because I keep thinking of a donut, but a DONET. And that's the system that they're really hoping will give us the answers that we're trying to get so that we will be better prepared in case the next big one hits us. And that's why we've been having Mr. Ichiro Araki with us in this interview. And we'll find out a little bit more today how they're going about getting the information. Now, earlier at the beginning, I mentioned Godzilla. Now, I know we know about Godzilla from movies, Japanese movies, you know, where you have these giant lizard-like creature wreaking havoc and terrorizing people, scary monster running around, coming out of the ocean. But here we're talking about a different kind of Godzilla, and we'll find out in today's reading.
Japan takes aim at the source of megaquakes. From the waterline to its top, the vessel Chikyu, also known as Godzilla Maru, towers nearly 30 stories tall. A helicopter landing pad juts over the bow. The two midship cranes are powerful enough to hoist a Boeing 787. The Japanese government built this ship with one goal in mind: to decipher the inner workings of a fault capable of unleashing a disaster far worse than the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and tsunami.
All right, so we begin with Japan takes aim at the source of megaquakes. In other words, Japan's focusing on the source of megaquakes, not just a regular earthquake, but these huge earthquakes, and they want to deal with it head on. They want to understand what megaquakes are all about and how to better prepare yourself in case one is about to start. And we begin from this description of this vessel, Chikyu, and it's got an interesting little nickname. What is it?
Godzilla Maru.
Okay, Godzilla Maru. And Godzilla, we know, is this monster, huge monster. And Maru, according to my research, I've read that Japanese vessels, ships, usually have their names with a Maru attached at the end. So since we're talking about this boat, and because it's huge, the ship is huge, it's got this nickname, Godzilla. And because it's a ship, Godzilla Maru. And it's described as towering nearly 30 stories tall. Now, tower, again, we know tower as a noun is that tall, skinny building. You think of like a lighthouse, maybe it's like a tower. We think of a bell tower, like the Big Ben in London. But tower can also be a verb. So if something is standing very, very tall, we would say it towers. And it's 30 stories tall. Now, how tall is 30 stories? I'm trying to imagine.
Kind of like an average business building, maybe, mm-hmm. in a big city.
Mm-hmm. So let's take Taipei 101. One third of it.
Mm-hmm. One third.
Mm-hmm. So if you've seen Taipei 101, or maybe you've visited Taipei 101, imagine one third of it. That's how tall this Godzilla Maru or Chikyu is. Okay, imagine a boat that tall. No wonder it's called Godzilla. Okay. And we move on to the next page. We're on page 42 now. We find out a little bit more about Godzilla Maru. And what do we see, Amanda?
Well, we see that not only is it 30 stories tall, but it also has a helicopter landing pad.
Makes sense.
And that helicopter landing pad juts just over the bow.
Okay. Well, let's begin with bow. What's a bow?
The bow is the front of a boat.
Okay, so in English, the different sides of a boat, whether the left side, the right side, the front, or the back, they all have a special name. We don't usually want to say front side of the boat, back side of the boat, left side of the boat, right side of the boat. You could, but there are official names for those areas of the boat. So the front, the bow, think of it like, you know, you're bowing, and when the boat's on the water, choppy waves, it looks like the boat is bowing, okay? Now, we have a phrase here, juts over.
Yeah, juts means to just stick out.
Okay.
So it sticks past the normal end of the boat.
Okay. Now, when can we use this phrase, to jut over? If we're saying jut over means to stick out. So, like, let's say I want to know the weather, the temperature today, and I stick my hand out the window. Can I say my hand is jutting out? Or would that sound strange?
That might sound a little strange.
Right. We don't use jut over in that sense. So when do we use jut over?
Usually, for example, if something like an object or like the part of a building, for example, the balcony of an apartment may jut out over the normal side of the apartment building.
Okay. Normally, we're talking about construction, building, something that's built, something that's man-made. We're not usually talking about something that can move in or out with freedom and mobility. Okay, so that's how we could use jutting out or jutting over. And then we have something else on this ship. What is it, Brian?
There are two midship cranes, and they are powerful enough to hoist a Boeing 787.
Okay, midship crane. What's a midship crane? Does anybody know?
Means that the crane is in the middle of the ship, not towards the ends of the ship.
Okay. And that leads to the next question. What is a crane?
Something that has the ability to lift something up into the air from a lower position.
Right. So normally in construction sites, if we're talking about a tall building being built, you will need a crane because you need to move a lot of stuff, heavy stuff, from the ground to high up. So you will need a crane, and there are two of them. Now, these things are, number one, if you're trying to move something high up, you need to be able to extend long enough and go high enough. So that's a lot of metal. And you have not just one crane, but two. So can you imagine the weight? Just how heavy the ship is already. And on top of that, it's supposed to be able to be powerful enough and to hoist a Boeing 787. Hoist. What's that?
Hoist. Well, hoist is one of our vocabulary focus words, and it is a verb, and it means to lift to something heavy. We usually use hoist or hoist special objects or very heavy objects.
Okay, so we're not talking about hoisting a book to the top shelf here. You don't hoist that. It's too small. But I can think of maybe if you go to the harbor, maybe you see some workers moving some bags of rice or heavy bags of whatever onto a boat, you'll be hoisting. Okay, maybe some of the ropes being used on a boat, they're heavy because they're really thick. You can hoist those as well. Anything heavy that you have to move up is hoisting. Okay, and we all know Boeing 787s are no small planes. So this is one very powerful ship. No wonder it's Godzilla Maru. Okay. Now, the Japanese government built the ship for what reason, Brian?
They had one goal in mind, and that was to decipher the inner workings of the fault down at the bottom of the ocean.
Okay, and this fault is capable of what?
Unleashing a disaster far worse than the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and tsunami.
Whoa, time out. Wait a minute. That earthquake was already monstrous. It was size 9, okay? That was huge. Mm. And they're expecting an even bigger one?
The possibility is there, yes.
Wow, okay. So they want to understand how to be more prepared if and when that big one comes. Okay, now we have mentioned this mission. We're going to find out in the next reading.
On a mission. In 2016, Japan hopes to complete a 9-year mission to drill into the heart of the Nankai Trough. The borehole will extend more than 3 miles into the Earth's crust. Chikyu was designed to go deep, penetrating the portion of the fault where megaquakes are born. Called the seismogenic zone, it's the region where rocks that are normally locked suddenly jerk past each other in what scientists call a megathrust quake. There's no danger the drilling will trigger an earthquake, Harold Tobin, co-chief scientist for the drilling project, said. The foot-wide hole is too tiny to affect the stress levels in such an enormous structure. By extracting cores from the fault, researchers will be able to analyze the rock itself, said Nobu Eguchi, program manager for science operations at Japan's Center for Deep Earth Exploration. Properties like stiffness, strength, mineral composition, and fluid content are all crucial to understanding how plates become locked and what happens when the pressure reaches the breaking point. When the deepest borehole is finished, scientists will install instruments to continuously measure motion on the fault, the accumulation of strain, and changes in the rock due to tectonic forces. Scientists hope the instruments will capture the run-up to the next big quake. If so, that data might help identify warning signs that precede a rupture.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Liz, and we've been talking and discussing this article, a science one for the month, on earthquakes and what the Japanese authorities have been doing to better prepare themselves before, if and when the next one hits. The next big one hits. And in the studio with me are Amanda and Brian, and we're now on page 42 of Advance Magazine, and we're talking about this mission. We just got a bunch of description on what the Japanese authorities are currently doing with this particular project or this new system that they're trying to implement. And all that description is well depicted on page 41. If you turn back to the previous page, we have an illustration of what they're doing. We've been talking about this Godzilla Maru or Chikyu, this special vessel that the Japanese authorities have built to do this special data collection. And it's a very daunting project, I must say. We have this boat, and look at how deep it's going. It's, so far we see that it's reached, 10,034 feet beneath sea floor, and it's a world record for deepest scientific ocean drilling. But they're not where they want to be. How much more do they need to go, Brian?
They want to go another 6,000, a little over 6,000 more feet below the sea floor and go into the fault zone itself.
Wow. Okay. And why are they doing all that? Well, we see this statement made by Kanazawa. We cannot stop the tsunami, but if we had had the system in place in 2011, we would have been able to reduce the casualties. So they're very confident that this system will give them better information. The data will help them to be better prepared in case the next one hits. Okay, and all this drilling, we see that it's off the coast of Japan. At the top of the illustration, we see the seafloor drilling, and we see that's not far from Kyoto, the city of Kyoto. And then you see all the monitoring networks. We've talked about the clusters of these, whatever they call seismometers, clusters. And as you can see, the pattern's not very neat. It's kind of windy and twisty, and they almost look like blood vessels.
They really do.
Yeah.
I guess it's because they're following certain patterns along the ocean floor, and that's why things turn out the way they did. So, and it's no wonder being so close to Kyoto, and Kyoto's not far from all the other commercial centers of Japan, so it's no wonder people are very nervous about the next big one hitting. All right, well, let's go back to the text on page 42. In 2016, Japan hopes for what, Amanda?
To complete a 9-year mission to drill into the heart of the Nankai Trough.
Okay, and we've been talking about the Nankai Trough being the exact area that they've been focusing on. And then we mentioned borehole again. Let's review. What's a borehole?
A borehole is an extremely deep hole that's left because of something that's been, because of a drill that's gone deep into something.
Okay, so it's not just an ordinary little hole. It has to be deep because of some special drilling going on. And it'll extend more than 3 miles into the Earth's crust. Wow. So if you've ever walked around the track, if you've ever gone walking anywhere, just think about 3 miles and that's how deep it is. That's pretty impressive. And this ship, Chikyu, or Godzilla Maru, was designed to do what, Amanda?
It was designed to go deep, penetrating the portion of the fault where megaquakes are born.
Okay, that's where megaquakes get started. So they're born, okay? And they want to go into that exact place, that source, so they can understand. And this area is called what, Brian?
It is called the seismogenic zone.
Okay. All right. So wait a minute. Let's take a quick time out here. Let's go over some words here. We've got seismometers. Then we have this seismogenic. And then we also have an adjective that we can use from time to time, seismic. Anything with this seisma something just means earthquake related.
That's right.
And seismometer, you see a meter at the end of the word, so you know it's about something relating to measurements. And then here we have a seismogenic zone. So seismogenic, genic is just the birthing, the beginning of something. So this is a zone where earthquakes are born, the beginnings of an earthquake. Okay, so anything with seismic is earthquake related. And if you want to describe something huge and shaking like an earthquake, that much power, you can say it's seismic, just to be, creative. Okay. All right. Now, this region is described as what, Brian?
It's the region where rocks deep down are normally locked. And what happens is they suddenly jerk past each other. And scientists call this motion a mega thrust quake.
Okay. And again, another great prefix, mega. What's that?
Mega means very big.
Okay. So anytime you want to talk about something huge in size, mega. And then these quakes are mega thrust quakes. So again, these are these huge, scary earthquakes. We're not talking about a little shake, okay? But people are worried. What's so scary about all this?
Well, I can understand their fear. I would be afraid of maybe triggering or setting off an earthquake because of the drill. But here we read that there's no danger that the drilling will trigger an earthquake, according to Harold Tobin, mm-hmm. who is the co-chief scientist.
Okay. So Tobin here, he's a co-chief scientist for this whole drilling project. He's trying to let people know, calm down, nothing to worry about. There's no danger. I guess people are worried because, you know, you're thinking, all right, we want to understand these big earthquakes. And so we go to the exact place where they started and we're going to poke at it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just poke, actually. We're drilling. We're going into it. So people are afraid that, is this going to get something started?
Right, because earthquakes happen because fault lines rub up against each other, right? So there's already that friction happening,
mm-hmm.
The jerking that we're talking about. And wouldn't a drill be jerking into the ground?
Mm-hmm.
So they think, oh, well, maybe that will trigger another earthquake.
Right. Trigger is a good word to describe. Maybe we might artificially get something started. You know, we might get something started in the man-made way, you know, because it's something that seems like we're messing with nature. But the scientists are telling us, no, we're not messing with nature. This is something perfectly safe. Okay. And why is that? What did Tobin say?
He said it's because the foot-wide hole is too tiny to affect the stress levels in such an enormous structure.
Okay, so they're drilling, but it's only a foot wide. A foot is only, what, 30 centimeters? So it's very skinny, very, very skinny. So all things considered, it's like a thread going into this gigantic plate, okay? And what are they trying to extract?
Well, they're trying to extract core from the fault itself.
Okay.
And core meaning rock.
Okay, so they're trying to get some rocks from down below. And why is that?
Because then they can see what it's made out of and maybe analyze the different parts of it that are interacting with each other.
Okay. They want to better understand what the rocks are like down there. This is a statement made by Nobu Eguchi, who is the program manager for science operations at Japan's Center for Deep Earth Exploration, which is another organization involved in this earthquake research business. Okay. All right. So specifically, okay, we're trying to understand these rocks. What kind of properties are they looking for?
Okay, they're looking for how stiff it is, how strong it is, the strength, the mineral composition, like what is it made of? You know, is it made of carbon? Or, you know, what is inside it? And then the fluid content. So what kind of fluid or liquid is inside of it?
Okay, all this is important. It's crucial to understanding how plates become locked and what happens when the pressure reaches the breaking point. I guess in some ways, it's almost like taking a blood sample if you're trying to do a health test. If you're monitoring somebody's health condition, you would be doing blood tests, a checkup periodically. And I guess this is what they're doing. They're doing a checkup on the plate by getting these samples of rocks from below and checking on your blood pressure, your cholesterol count. Except for rocks, you would do stiffness and strength and mineral composition instead. Okay. Now, what happens when the deepest borehole is finished?
Okay, well, what the scientists will do is they will install instruments to continuously measure the motion on the fault.
Okay, and what else, Brian?
They're also measuring the accumulation of strain and the changes in the rock due to tectonic forces.
Oh, I love that adjective, tectonic. What is tectonic, Brian?
It relates to the structure of the surface of the earth and the way it is formed, changed, and moved by internal forces.
Okay, so it's not just about relating to the earth, but movement that involves the earth. Okay, so it's tectonic. I don't know why, I just love the way it sounds. Okay. So having described all this, what are scientists hoping for?
Well, they hope that these instruments will capture the run-up to the next big quake. In other words, they're hoping that they will be able to foresee or predict when the next big quake will happen.
Okay. So what do you think, guys? What do you think about all this research going on, this drilling, this Godzilla Maru floating out there?
I think it's worth it. Yeah, if it gives people a little earlier warning, it's definitely worth it.
Okay, what do you think, Amanda?
Yeah, I do think it's worth it as well. I mean, Japan has a lot to protect, mm-hmm. and it's also helping, not only is it helping Japan, but maybe it will help the rest of the world that also have different fault lines.
That's true. Japan's not the only country in the world where earthquakes are a regular occurrence. So when one country is able to figure some things out, they get some valuable information, I'm sure that information will be well used, and hopefully they'll share that wealth of information and knowledge with other countries that have also been under this, this situation where earthquakes are happening quite regularly. Mm. And hopefully people will be better prepared. But again, as I mentioned before, it's not just about getting the warning signs. It's one thing to be forewarned. It's another thing knowing what to do once you're warned. Mm. And to be making good decisions and smart decisions and being better prepared. I know for myself I can do a better job in many areas when it comes to earthquake safety and stuff like that. And let us know what you think, friends. We'd like to hear from you and see what you think about being prepared for earthquakes or your experience, thoughts, comments about this 3-day article. And that concludes the science article. Thank you for joining us here. My name is Liz.
Brian.
And Amanda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.